Now, Iran has announced that it is going to allow the tech giant Google to run its search engines. But how exactly will it work? And you may have heard that last week, the actor who played the Star Trek character Mr. Spock, Leonard Nimoy, passed away at the age of 83. In honour of this legendary man, we'll explore whether tech gadgets that we know and love today have drawn inspiration from Star Trek. Our expert tonight is technology journalist Claire Porter. Claire, thanks for joining us.
Hi, how are you?
I'm very great. What do we know about the announcement regarding Google and Iran?
Iran has basically said that it's prepared to work with Google. And I guess Google is going to establish a version of its servers in Iran. So this is a big deal. I mean, I guess it's one of the first major forays for Iran into the world of internet and into the world of the Google search engine. You would hope that it means Iran is prepared to open up digitally, if not metaphorically, to the rest of the world, and by providing Google access within its borders, it would mean that Iran has more access to the outside world and to opinions and perspectives that may not be reflected within their physical environment.
How do these arrangements tend to work? Is it entirely free-for-all, or is there a lot of vetting still?
Oh, I imagine it's a heavily political situation that has taken years of negotiation. I don't imagine that this is something that has come about overnight or is in any way surprising to people at Google. I mean, it's a surprise to the rest of the world because obviously it's the first time we're hearing about it. But I imagine that this would have been years of negotiation, and I wonder what restrictions will be placed on Google users in Iran and whether they'll have a separate experience to the rest of the world.
I imagine, and a lot of scrutiny on Google too, not to compromise too much.
Well, I think that people feel like Google has also been trying to enter China for a long time and has been met with resistance. So while there may be some, attention thrown on them in regards to how they execute on this, I think, baby steps and slowly but surely, a watered down version of Google in Iran is probably better than no Google at all, surely.
Now, over the weekend, our time, there was some sad news for Star Trek fans.
I'm not interested in the opinion of the majority, Mr. Gaetano. The components must be weighed. Our dangers to ourselves as well as our duties to other life forms, friendly or not.
Star Trek fans have been mourning the death of Leonard Nimoy. It's often said that Star Trek gadgets paved the way for some technology that we're using day to day now. Can you give me some examples? Are you kind of signed on to this theory that what we're seeing now, you could have seen back then?
Oh, gosh, absolutely. Star Trek was the inspiration for a number of different devices that we now take for granted. I mean, the iPad, I guess, is the one that comes to mind. You remember in Star Trek, I can't remember exactly what they called it, but they had a series of tablets, and each tablet performed an individual duty. So you'd actually see the Star Trek Voyager crew in particular handing out different versions of tablets according to the needs of the captain. I mean, it's a very lo-fi way of going about it. You've got your digital virtual assistants. I guess what we now know is Siri sort of first showed up in Star Trek as a virtual assistant that is someone that is not physically embodied, but a computer system that does everything for you.
So where's the role now for science fiction to inspire technology? What do you look at now and think, well, in 50 years' time or 20 years' time, we'll be using that?
I mean, obviously, there's artificial intelligence is, I think, probably the next big thing that will come straight out of science fiction and smack bam into reality. I mean, this has been reflected in science fiction, since the early, 70s, if not late 60s. And I think, today's films, we're starting to see the consequences of what happens when intelligence no longer needs to take a physical form. And you no longer have to necessarily be alive, quote unquote, to keep a presence, at least in the digital sphere. So I think we're starting to see what happens when man roboticizes himself and robots humanize themselves. You've got this very strange disjuncture about what it means to be human and what humanity means in today's day and age. And I think as we start to see all of these films come into the cinemas, so too we're starting to see developments already in artificial intelligence take shape.
Claire, we've got a minute left. Communications Minister Malcolm Turnbull has made some comments about the types of apps he uses. He's kind of trying to avoid metadata laws, is that right?
Yes, you can see the communications minister trying to subtly communicate to people that even were the mandatory data retention bill to pass, there are apps that you can use that can be an attempt at least to circumvent spying eyes. Apps like Wicker, which is one he uses himself, which encrypts all forms of communication, which means that even were officials to get hold of these communications, you'd need a passcode to unscramble all of the information stored therein. Ministers have been told not to use iMessage in Canberra today because Mr. Turnbull said that it's the most vulnerable form of text messaging. You know, the quickest way to ASIO is through iMessage, apparently. So Mr. Turnbull has been sharing his digital savvy with us this week.
He is. He's so Gen Y, that communications minister. And in fact, thanks so much for joining us, Claire. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks again.
On RN Drive. And actually, the communications minister is on 7:30 for an exclusive interview with Lee Sales tonight. So after the show, first you've got to watch RN Drive. Listen to RN Drive. You've got to listen to the communications minister. And that was technology journalist Claire Porter. It's time for the news now. After the news, we're going to head to Iraq.